You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, what's up? It's me, Salish. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Salish Thomas, and I'm so excited to introduce my friend today, who is a total bad ass. Okay. From the Broadway National Tour, 42nd Street, to being a Tony Award-winning Broadway producer, my guest today has an impressive resume of shows she's produced on Broadway, including but not limited to Head Over Heels, Carousel, Indecent, Dames at Sea, Forrest Whitaker's production of Huey, and An American Paris, which she took to the West End and it also toured. Her list of co-producing credits never ends. She is a member of the Broadway League, a Tony Award voter, and a graduate of USC. On a personal note, she is so beautiful and so talented that if she wanted to, if she felt like it, she could still perform today. I don't think I've ever met someone who has done so many things in so few years. Have you heard of the Museum of Broadway in Times Square? Okay, well, it's phenomenal and it's a theater kid's dream. I would actually compare it to being like the Metropolitan Museum of Art for the Broadway community. Yeah, she co-founded and created that. Oh, and one last thing. She is so sweet and so kind and so gentle and so lovely, all while being so powerful and badass. Please help me welcome my friend, Julie Boardman.
Well, now I'm very embarrassed. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are a goddess and so amazing. You're amazing. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. I'm coming to you from the rehearsal studio at the Museum of Broadway.
What do you mean rehearsal studio?
Know that we have one. Yeah.
Can people rehearse there?
Yeah. And they can also do like talks and a kid's birthday party or like cocktail event, or we do all sorts of things.
Okay. Wait, I've been twice and I did not know that was there. What? What floor is it on?
Yeah. It's on the first floor, just right by the ticket desk. But over my shoulder is actually Duncan Sheik's piano that was used on stage in Spring Awakening. So it's been played by some pretty notable people so far. So.
Okay, that is so freaking wild. Okay, how did we get here? How long did it take from incept, like, of the idea of I'm going to make a museum of all the freaking biggest Broadway things? It's a treasure trove. How long did it take from the idea to okay, it exists, you've birthed it into the world?
I think about 5 years from the time that my partner Diane Nicoletti and I had a conversation about creating it until we opened our doors. But I think it actually started a little further before that. You know, there was these conversations happening a lot in the Broadway community. How do we get millennials to come to Broadway? It was like a huge topic at the time. And then later, one of my investors in An American in Paris actually was like, why isn't there a Broadway museum? And I was like, I don't know. Good question. And it kind of went in one ear and out the other. And at the same time as all of that, I was working in events, doing like a lot of promotional marketing events for big brands. Working with Diane was one of my clients. So we would do all these fun things, giving jobs to a lot of out of work actors while they're auditioning. You know, and I worked with like Maybelline for Fashion Week and Diet Coke and Nike and Game of Thrones with Diane and just all these fan activations. So the museum.
How could
really
I forget
becoming...
that? You hired me. I was the elevator girl one day.
Yes.
Like, is that Chris Pratt in the elevator? Be cool, be cool, be cool. Yes, I remember. Okay, go on.
So then Diane and I, we were just catching up over cocktails and we had gone to USC together. So we've just been friends for such a long time. And we were talking about this idea. And it was right at the heyday of like Museum of Ice Cream and the sprinkle pool photo that everyone was posting and Color Yes. Factory was just coming about. And this light bulb went off and we're like, oh, what if you took Broadway's history and then like further, how do you even make a Broadway show? And we did it in that way of an experiential museum, like basically a fan activation, very similar to everything that we had been doing in our professional worlds. And then, you know, basically it's bringing the story of Broadway to life. And so that's what we set out to do. And at first, we didn't take each other super seriously. It was just like kind of whiteboarding and brainstorming, like, well, what would we want it to be if we were to make it? And not taking ourselves super seriously, because how on earth was like, I wanted the people to make this thing for,
it's so
for
incredible.
Broadway that's been around for such a long time. So,
right.
You know, all of that was pretty like daunting. And then we're the more and more as we kind of were going through it, we're like, oh, it actually is a good idea. Oh, wait, this should exist. And, you know, so then we just took all the steps. And yeah, it wasn't easy. But there's that quote my grandmother would always say, like, if it was easy, everyone would do it. And so that was helpful to stay motivated. And then to have Diane as a partner, too, because we were friends first, we, you know, if one person was up and the other was down, we would always try to like compliment each other and like, push on, and we had different strengths and weaknesses and things. So it was a good partnership to make it happen also.
Julie, I'm listening to you and I'm looking at you and I'm in awe. I feel like you are so, not just I feel, you are so incredible. I'm like, you look, you're not, okay. So yes, you've co-founded this huge museum. It's three floors, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Times Square, like if you see a Broadway show, you can throw a rock and hit the museum. Like it's right there in the district with everything else. That is no small feat. It does not sound cheap. Not only that, but you've produced these big shows, like not just a small part, like you're a producer in it. And not to mention, you're a woman and you are still young. You're not 85 years old. Y'all, if you are not, if you're not watching this and you're hearing right now, she's young. How have you found, what's the question here? How have you found your way with these things that there's not a lot of people your age, there's not a lot of women in this producing sphere. How did you find yourself in this arena?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I have faced some adversity, I guess, like as I've been going along. I don't know. I think I'm lucky to have, you know, my parents are entrepreneurs, and you know, ahead of that, like my grandparents, my grandfathers are both like, one was an inventor and one was, you know, like for
what?
Like
aerospace. That's cool. So
they came from this like background that was like, if you want to do something, go figure out how to do it. And that's kind of how I was raised. But at the same time as like having the arts around me in Orange County in California, where I grew up, and, you know, so, and performing from the age of five and just like loving Broadway and all these things. And so when I had finished the performing chapter of my life, I just wanted to figure out how to get behind the scenes and like, how do you make the shows? And you know, be part of the storytelling and what stories are told. And that was just like a really interesting part to me. And decided, you know, I wanted to creative produce. And I don't think there's not a ton of like creative producers out there. So, and to look to try to find mentorship and things like, I don't know, it wasn't always easy, I guess. So, I think, yeah, I don't know if there isn't like a path, you just sort of make one for yourself, I guess. You know, I was trying to figure out how to, okay, so I'll tell a story. So I don't know if it's an appropriate story, but my very first time that I went to the, I had just joined the Broadway League and I was a co-producer on American of Paris, and we had opened in Paris, and I was
so
on
cool.
Total high. And we, you know, I came back to New York and went to the annual meeting for the Broadway League. And, you know, I didn't really know anyone very much. I knew a couple people, but not very many. And I got in this elevator and I went up the elevator and I got off on the same floor as a bunch of people. And I think they were like, who's this person? And then I checked my code and someone asked me whose office I worked in. And so I was like, what do you mean? And they were like, whose assistant are you? And I was like, oh, I'm not. I'm actually like, I just, you know, I'm a co-producer. I'm new into this world. And I was in my like late 20s, I think, at that time. And I decided kind of in that moment that I didn't want to be in that uncomfortable situation anymore. So I needed to meet everyone. And I mean, that person was totally not wrong. They didn't know me. So you know, I just wanted to make as many friends as possible. And so I looked at it as like, you know, I, at that moment, now I think there's a lot of younger people who are in, you know, co-producing and producing roles on Broadway, which is really exciting. But at that time, I don't think there were very many as I was looking around the room. And yeah, so I was like, I just need to make all the friends. And then,
which is easy, you know, for kind you. Of. Oh, it's got to be easy for you.
But to look at it kind of like a marathon instead of a sprint. So, you know, I didn't have to rush to be part of like 12 shows all at the same time. I could like pick and choose the ones that I, you know, really identified with me. So prior to co-producing on American in Paris, I was a co-producer on, and had basically what that means is helping to raise money and then, you know, learning and getting to be, you know, part of different parts of the show, depending on what the needs might be. But so I had been a co-producer on the Peter and the Starcatcher national tour, and then the Dreamgirls non-equity tour that went to Japan. And then American in Paris is the first show I did. And then it was kind of just a series of like, you know, someone being like, oh yeah, I'm doing the show. And then, you know, step-by-step kind of thing, right? So, and then, yeah, like learning what my tastes were. And I think I was always a person who loved musicals, but then I found myself like loving plays so much. So
interesting.
So like Indecent, like that was, I like love Indecent so much. It was part of The Inheritance. It was part of, you know, all
I
these
loved
plays,
The Inheritance. So. I loved it. And you know what? It was two parts, right? Like you had to come back and see it at a different time. The first time I saw it, it was one cast. And then when I came back the next day, Fitz was in it. My president from Scandal. He wasn't there the time I saw it. And I had no idea, Julie, he came out on stage and I audibly gasped from the second row. I was like,
oh my gosh.
It was, I loved that show. And I'm not big on plays either, but there's a couple plays out there that are incredible. Okay, so you mentioned the Broadway League. Did you find them or did they find you? How? And also, as an actor, I hear, oh, Broadway League. Oh yeah, I know what the Broadway League is, but what actually is it?
The Broadway League is a trade organization. So it does all like the labor negotiations and then creates some like, they do like Viva Broadway and some educational kind of things and audience development and things like that.
But
it's a trade organization that represents the producers and the theater owners in all those negotiations. So
is it something that like as a budding producer you apply for? Do you like how do you become a part of that?
Yeah, you do. You apply. I think there's like a couple different levels. So but there's like an entry kind of level, then there, yeah, and there's, I think that's new. Sorry, now you might need to edit this part.
It's okay.
But yeah, there's a couple levels. So I was an associate member when I first joined, and then I actually now I'm a Tony voter. So I'm a full member from being part of Head Over Heels because I had raised a certain amount of money to be part of that. And I was part of the producing team and it was really exciting.
I feel excited for you. So you mentioned like when my performance chapter was over, Julie, I am in this space right now where I'm like, I think we're knocking on the door of we're done. I'm not sure I'm there, but the thought keeps cropping up. What was that for you when you were just like, yeah, I'm not gonna, was it an active like, and I'm done? Or was, what did that look like? What did that transition look like for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. I have to go a little bit down memory lane for a second and think back. But I think, you know, when, you know, I started watching shows when I was five and I always wanted to be on the stage and that's how I would watch a show. So I'd be like, oh, I want, or I could be that part or I want, you know, that kind of thing. And then at this one point, I had become friends, got introduced through another friend to Stuart Oaken, who was the lead producer on An American in Paris. And he was doing the Addams Family and I happened to be in Chicago. And so I went to go see it during, I think, previews before they hit opened. And it was the first time when I watched a show and I was like, oh, I put on like a producer hat almost. And I was like, oh, but what if they cut that? And what if this wasn't quite working for me? And I watched the show in a very different way. And that was kind of this like moment where I was like, oh yeah, no, I think I do want to be a producer and behind the scenes. But it was really hard to figure out how to get in because in me, and it has grown, I think, which is great. But Broadway's always been like a very small community, and they didn't know how to kind of get inside the bubble, if you will. So it did take quite a few attempts to get in, I guess. But then I suppose I figured it out.
I guess you did figure it out. did you ever miss, or do you ever miss performing?
Yeah, I hated auditioning so much. So, yeah. But yes, I do miss performing. I mean, I guess I just sing in my apartment now, but.
Yeah, I'm like, do you have an outlet? Like, it takes like a lot of talent to be in 42nd Street. It's not, you're not doing nothing, okay? So you obviously have a lot of talent and you still are so beautiful. Like, is there any outlet for you to still like, do your thing or would you ever want that? Or you're like, no, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could never say never, but I think in this case, I can almost certainly say never. But I should do it more often, but it's like fun to go to take class. So we did a talk here the other day with Randy Skinner with this author who wrote a book about 42nd Street. And so that was really fun. And, you know, so I would go take Randy's class like every once in a while. And, you know, I was like an opera major in college. So like, I love, you know, singing just at home for me now, like I don't actually perform it at all. But, you know, I that creative outlet, I think I started painting at that time when I switched to like the other side. And that was sort of my, like, I need some sort of like creative outlet here.
Exactly. So, right. I also didn't realize that you were a painter.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, just for fun.
You say just for fun, but look, you do stuff just for fun and you're sitting in your museum right now. So something that starts off as a hobby or something like a fun thought can truly turn into other things if you want it to.
I feel like I need to be on your podcast every day. This is like the best ever.
I'm like, I talk to you all the time when I see you at, you know, this bar, this party, whatever. But like, I've never really gotten to ask you all these awesome questions about yourself. We met through our friend Gayla. And so I'm like, oh, that's Gayla's friend. Julia's
the opening
Gayla.
Night of An American in Paris.
Which was so epic. I have it. I'm not in my living room right now, but in my living room, I have it framed, the program from American in Paris. Aww. With the seal that it's opening night. And that was such a special night. I wasn't supposed to go. You gave me the seat of your guest who wasn't there for the first act because of a plane thing or something. You let me have the seat, and then I was able to find a place for the second. It was so like, what is this?
It's so crazy.
It was crazy. And it was like.
But you're like a person who always just says yes. And you're like, you know, I admire that about you. But. Yes, you were like, cool, I'll come, I'll be there. And then you
and
did.
It also,
and
if I don't get so in, much fun. It was so fun. Yeah. Like, I get goosebumps thinking about that night. And I was like, new to New York, just
that
a
person,
nobody.
That person was Jaron Muse. I don't know if you've crossed paths with him, but that's
Motown,
who it was.
Motown, right?
He was on, I think, the Motown tour at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes!
So he flew in to go to the opening. I forgot all about that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't.
That memory lane.
It's so crazy. And like, I remember being at a party with you and Gayla and Walt and some other people. And, you know, it was just a fun night. Oh, wait, was that Tony Awards night? And then by the end of the night, some of the people in the room had become Tony Award winners. That was not American in Paris opening night. That was the Tony's night. But that were we at the same? We were at the same.
Yeah. Night? Yeah.
And so for that to feel so special for me, how did you feel? Like, you were the woman of the hour. I remember you wearing red dress. It was, I don't know if that was for American in Paris opening night or I'm blending the two because both were such phenomenal nights. The nights you guys won the Tony Awards and the night that it opened on Broadway, but how did you feel?
My AirPod died.
It's okay. I can pause, or do you want to keep going?
One thing, just since we did
sorry.
Pause.
Sorry. Okay, so for opening night of American in Paris on Broadway, and or the Tony Awards, when everything was all of the excitement was happening, I was excited to be around. How was it for you? Like, how did you feel? Not just being around, but being very on the inside, very involved in all of that.
Yeah, it was really surreal because just as a little kid growing up, loving theater so much, you know, to be part of a show like that, that I think to me, you know, artistically, and there's a message, but it was escapist, but, you know, it just, I think the world of that show and of Christopher Wheeldon, I just think he's a genius. And I say that to him every time I see him. Yeah, it just felt really surreal. And a really cool way to like start to be part of the community. And then again, like not every show is like that. Every show is very different in the path it takes and everything. But yeah, it was a really cool way to start. And then, yeah, I think it's been like I don't know, I should probably count, but it's maybe a little over a dozen shows now. Last season I was part of A Doll's House, which was incredible, with Jessica Chastain.
That's cool.
And yeah, and like that story really resonated with me. So I'm like finding material that like I think is thought provoking and means something, and art matters and all those things. And then, you know, I love escapism as well. So yeah, and then I'm part of the Cabaret Revival coming up. Which is
you are?
Yes.
Oh, that's going to be so good. I cannot wait. It's going to be epic.
Mm-hmm. Epic. Like I saw it in London, and it was just, and to me that show checks so many boxes too. It's, you know, an incredible like show first and foremost. The message is so timely, really sadly, based on what's going on in the world. It stars Eddie Redmayne. It's got the Sleep No More kind of vibe to it, like where it's very like immersive, and there's a pre-show and all this stuff. So it's very much an event. But I think, you know, I was never a theater historian, right? So like getting back to the museum for a second. Diana and I like hired and surrounded ourselves by like with very talented people and curators and historians and all of these people. But, you know, from the moment of starting it, then I did like full deep dives and learned so much more about theater history than I ever knew growing up.
Right.
And listened to all these interviews and everything. And with Cabaret, you know, it's really interesting. So inside the museum, taking a step back there for people who haven't been, who might be watching or listening. So you check in, we're on 45th Street between 6th and 7th, next door to the Lyceum. The oldest continuously operating Broadway theater. And so you come into the gift shop, and then at the back of the gift shop is where you check in. It's a time ticket, so that makes sure that it's never too crowded. It's got a good like flow to it.
Right.
You go through this kind of backstage experience to get up to the third floor via the stairs, but we also have elevators, of course. And you go into this room that's the Playbill room, and it's everything that's currently running on Broadway today, because a lot of people know like the big hits, but they don't have any idea of like, you know, some of the new shows that are being created. So
right.
You can see everything that's on Broadway today. Then you go through this door that says, let's start at the very beginning. And we call it the map room, but it's the story of the theaters. So the theaters are actually started in the Financial District and migrated north to Times Square,
which is then
Longacre Square. So it became like what we know it today. And we do that through a 4-minute video. So it's like a very abridged history. And then you start walking the timeline of Broadway from 1732 all the way to present day. And it's organized around this idea that we stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. So had people not pioneered and broken ground and trailblazed, we would never have the art that we have today. And then there's also one other through line that some people pick up on and some others don't, but We basically programmed it for a lot of different levels of interest. So people who've never seen a show before, people who know like everything about everything, hopefully can still find some fun facts or stories they didn't know. But we have this quote by Yasmina Reza that says, "Theater is a mirror, a sharp reflection of society." And when you look at the timeline through that lens too, we show current events as you're going through the timeline so that you can kind of keep in mind what's happening in the world or in America at the time that the shows are being produced. So back to Cabaret, when that was produced on Broadway, so Hal Prince was in rehearsals with the cast and he showed them some photos, and everyone assumed that it was photos from 1930s Berlin, but it was actually what was happening in America, in Alabama, right? So it was like, because it was at the height of the civil rights movement. So it was interesting because the theater is a reflection, right? So by using this story that was so specific to 1930s Berlin, but it's set today where there's actually things in that level of hatred happening. And, there's a line in the show that says something, I'm going to totally butcher it right now, but it says something to the effect of like, if you're not against them, you're for them.
Mm.
And that idea, especially now today as it's being produced again with what's going on in the world, is just, that whole show causes the audience to like do a hard look at yourself, like look in the mirror and see like, what would I do in that situation?
Right.
Would I take a stand or would I be silent? And like silence is complicity. So anyways, it's like, it's very deep. That is, we have like that interview with Hal Prince. You can hear him talking about how the show was created. And then that copy on the wall definitely talks about, all of those messages that are at the heart of the show. So
when does Cabaret open?
It starts performances April 1st, and then it opens on the 20th and 21st. So it's coming up.
Oh, just in time for the cutoff. Whoa. Yes. Oh, that's going to be so exciting.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed for you and your journey with all of that. But also, I cannot wait to see it. Okay, I know I'm going to let you go soon, but I do have a couple more questions for you. I know that you're around a lot of people. You make friends easily. You talk to lots of people. You're a big Broadway producer. So when you, do you ever, and you also were in the industry as a performer, do you ever get starstruck?
Not really, no.
No.
And I kind of never have in my life ever. So I don't know. No. No.
I'm so the opposite. I'm the opposite. I'll be working at Disneyland back in the day as a princess, and then Snow White will walk in. I'll be like, oh my God, can you sign? So stupid. Okay. Well, then what has been your biggest pinch me moment in your life?
In your whole life. That's a great question. I wonder if this is it. I in my college choir, so I went to Loyola Marymount and then transferred to USC. But my choir at Loyola Marymount was picked to sing behind Barbara Streisand at the Staples Center. So I got to do that, which was epic, right? It was this moment where I realized how small the world was, because my uncle, his best man, was like her music director. Like all these small world things started to happen. And then I think perhaps because of that, and my friend was like supposed to be the dancer in the show and then ended up not, like Cody Green, all sorts of things. It was just like this weird moment where like, the world was so small. And I think maybe potentially that experience helped so that I don't really become starstruck at all. Cause I started to see it's like all just like so small. Like, I don't know. Yeah, the world is really small. So like my friend that I grew up performing with is best friends with Jessica Chastain from, going to Juilliard together. Like that's how small the world is, right? And then I'm like a producer on her Broadway show. So it's like, it's just a weird small world. So I don't know, pinch me moment forever, but Yeah.
I mean, singing behind Barbara Streisand in college is pretty cool.
That was a pretty cool thing. Most people don't know. I was trying to think of something most people don't know. But I think also like signing the lease for the museum, like that was like a pretty epic, like I had to like sign on the dotted line for like, you know, this space that's 26,000 square feet.
I'm sweating.
Square.
I'm sweating
and
for
just,
you.
And just like having like the belief and faith that we could do it also. Cause I think maybe because there was never a Broadway museum before, maybe because we were like two younger women, technically millennials, maybe, you know, maybe people didn't necessarily think that we could do it. And by securing the real estate, that I think changed the people's perception, I think, of everything. And then it kind of just one thing kind of led into the next. And so, yeah, here we are. Yesterday was our 15-month, if I'm counting correct, anniversary. So,
wow. Yeah,
just trying to celebrate the little moments because we've been running for like a long time now. And
yeah, it's good. Like, it's definitely something when people come to town, like, we should go, like, if my friends are Broadway lovers, which most of them are, I'm like, let's go there. Like, it's a theater kid dream. It really is, Julie.
Oh, yeah.
And it feels good. Like, you know, if you go into Broadway theater, so many of them are just like so old and filled with history, like not living in New York. I would think they're these big, grand, brand new, everything. No, it's like there's deep history. It's such this
deep
like
history.
Yeah. And so the museum reflects that. It feels like while still feeling new, it feels very like walking into the gift shop and hearing, we're not gonna pay rent. Like that's like hearing songs that I fell in love with when I first was like realizing Broadway was a thing. It's like, it took me right back to, oh yeah. Remember when I fell in love with Broadway before there was the show business part, it just the performance, like learning 525,000, like whatever, like it just feels, or Wicked playing, like it feels good.
Yeah.
It does. It really does.
And I think that's something that comes out when people go through the museum, when I'm just in there and I'm like overhearing like other people talk about it. You know, everyone kind of has a different entry point into Broadway, what that means to them. So maybe they've seen so many Broadway shows and had been going since they were a little kid. If they're older now, like that little kid moment or whenever it was, it might have been kind of a long time ago. And so you see people being like, oh yeah, that's the first Broadway show I saw. And then, you know, later, like a little kid now might be like, oh yeah, I just saw Wicked for the first time, or I just saw Hamilton, or I just saw whatever the show might be. And so, you know, or it might've just been the night before, like, or going that night. So it's kind of fun to hear those like stories. And I think coming on out of COVID and being on the other side of it too, I think there's like a deep appreciation for people to a deep appreciation for people, you know, I think maybe people took the theater for granted a bit more before COVID. And then now they're like, oh yeah, like live, there's nothing like live theater. But we have this exhibit, The Making of a Broadway Show, that David Rockwell designed. And it takes you behind the scenes into how you make a Broadway show. You don't have to be an actor. There's so many different jobs you could do and still be part of the Broadway community. And I think that's the thing that most people don't realize. And I don't think like when you go through, you leave and you're like, oh yeah, I need to go, you know, be the accountant for Broadway or something like that, or go design the sets or anything. But I think for people who just love Broadway and they walk through that exhibit, it gives them this new appreciation for Broadway, because you see like how the shows are developed, that it started with a blank page, that all the collaboration that goes on. We have this like flow chart, if you will, so you can see that whole like step by step. And we've had a little fun with it. So we're like, the producer ran out of money, go back to the beginning, you know. There's so much theater that never even makes it to Broadway,
right? So much theater,
takes, most people have no idea. They just know that there is a show that they heard was good and they're going to see it. So, you know, I think to pull back the curtain and show that, or also like, you know, Annie was the first show I saw when I was five. So learning like, on that flow chart, you're like, oh, then it goes to licensing, and that's how people get to do it in their high school or regional or community theater, kind of children's theater productions. So, you know, it kind of paints a fuller picture. And then I think people just appreciate whatever show they see next, like a lot more.
I love that. And you're talking about entry points for theater. Eden Espinosa was my first Elphaba in Wicked, and she single-handedly changed my life. Her performance back in, I don't know what year that was, 2000 and I don't know, 9 or something. No, before that.
Maybe earlier.
Yeah. It was earlier, because that was when I was in high school. I saw her when I was in the 8th grade, so it was earlier than that. It's like 07 or something. Yeah. And then I think Megan Hilty was the Glinda, and I saw Megan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think they actually might have both done it in California too. I was like, oh wait, is this the same duo? I'm not sure. But Eden Espinosa definitely was a big entry point for me. Julie, you're That's the bomb. So cool. Before I let you go, what would be your advice for budding entrepreneurs, somebody who wants to do what you're doing? What would you tell them?
I think if you look at the whole of everything, like if I had looked at the museum as like, we're making a museum every day, like it would have been really daunting and stressful. But instead, we kind of adapted this motto of like step by step, right? So, you know, work on the piece that you're doing now, and then figure out the next step, and then figure out the next step. And then eventually we built a museum. I think kind of similarly with like how I got into the Broadway community on the producing side was that same step-by-step. So, you know, I did one show and then I got to do the next and did the next. And I think there's also a part that's, if you say you're going to do something, make sure you do, because you only have yourself and your reputation, right? And it's a very small world. So, you know, on like a Broadway show, when you're raising money for it, you have to commit to raising a certain amount of money. So just make sure you can do it, and believe in yourself, and to have, you know, a support system and people around you who also believe in you. Cause you know, when something doesn't work, it's really hard to pick yourself back up after. And I don't think a lot of people talk about that, but, you know, so you have to have good people around you to remind you that it's okay, and you'll figure it out, and then there'll be the next one, and all of those things. So I don't know, lots of life lessons in there. I like to post a lot of those quotes that are inspirational.
I'm feeling very inspired. How can people find you, follow you, follow the museum? Where do we go?
Yeah, well, the museum is just at Museum of Broadway, so pretty easy. The website is themuseumofbroadway.com. That's where people can get tickets and learn more. We do a lot of free programming and talks, which is really fun. And we've done like cast album signings and book signings. And
we've
got some cool ones coming up that are just about to be announced. So we always put them on, you know, we have a newsletter list, and we put them on social, and we put them, you know, out into the world. So, you know, always be on the lookout for those, because they're really fun. And we try to cover like a big range of topics too. I guess personally, I don't know, my Instagram's at, it's Miss Julie Boardman. So MS Julie Boardman.
You're awesome. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for spending time. You were so lovely. You're so just, that's how I describe my feeling right now is,
That is very nice. No, again, let's do this every day in the morning so that I can go out and have a good day after.
You're the best. Thank you, Julie. You are amazing. Julie Boardman, everybody. And that wraps another episode of Black Hair in the Big League. Y'all, I'm so honored to have such great guests on this show. And if there's somebody who you want to listen to, please drop me a note on my Instagram at Salisha Thomas or at Black Hair Podcast, and slip into those DMs and let me know
what you want to hear, who you want to hear from. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast, rate it, leave a review, tell a friend, follow us on Patreon at Black Hair in the Big Leagues. Y'all, I am so grateful that you are part of this community. It would not be the same without you. Shout out to Wilton Music for producing my theme song, Love COD. Shout out to Colin Tabor for editing this episode and most of these episodes. And shout out to you for listening. Y'all, my heart is so big and I feel so grateful. Thank you for listening to Black Hair in the Big Leagues. I'm your host, Salisha Thomas. See you next week.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.